Welcome to our brand new episode of the Internet's Most Hated Mafia-Themed Geek Podcast, the Lone Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. This week, I know y'all hate it. It's going to be kind of a review-heavy episode, in a way. That's because we're still experiencing technical issues and issues surrounding the show. As much as we want to get rid of those issues, they're still plaguing the show in some way. That's right. For those of you out there, please get, you know, if you want to send us, you know, thoughts, prayers, whatever, to get rid of these gremlins that are plaguing the show over the past couple of weeks, please do so. I'm not going to stop you. But I'm going to try to present these reviews in a way that's kind of different, but you kind of hear with other podcasts, and that is the majority of these movies that I'm about to discuss came out last year, but for the most part, they're along with in the communities that they were represented in, they were kind of hated. So as much as I jinx myself when I say it, this might actually be a very short episode. It might be as little as a half hour. So please bear with me as I go over these films. I'm going to kind of sandwich horror with the sci-fi and fantasy aspect. First one I'm going to talk about, go through the list, is Hellboy that came out last year. I think it came out last year, the 2019 Hellboy. Yes, this movie was hated in the community. The trailers to me looked great. There was some aspects of this movie I did like. I did like the person who kind of presented Hellboy in a way, but overall, as a film, it might have matched the theme of the comic, but when compared to the Ron Perlman Hellraiser movies that were out earlier this century, the early 2000s, but they didn't match the... I want to say the ones that starred Ron Perlman as Hellboy were a little bit, even though they were in their own way lighthearted, it had some grit, it had some action, and actually had some weight, where this was a little bit, it seemed too lighthearted, too light. It seemed too, in a lot of ways, it's kind of hard for me to put it in the right way. This new Hellboy seemed a lot looser, where in regards to the earlier renditions of Hellboy, the ones that came out with Ron Perlman, they seemed like a tighter format for beat for beat. Granted, both movies probably had their plot holes, but I want to say this current one had decent effects, but it was, in a way, kind of like, okay, we're taking ourselves seriously. All right, light moment. I hate to do the comparison again like I did in previous review episodes. It kind of felt like John Johnson's Skeleton Key in a way. Meaning that in the first one, you had a lot of seemed like serious moments and all of a sudden joke. It was like building up serious. Okay, here's something serious. Joke. But with this, it was just joke. It seemed like more... Joke, and it was, it. Do I recommend it? No, but if you have the chance to rent it for free like I did at the library, please, if you want to check it out, do it that way. I don't really recommend it too much. Again, those in the parts sold it well, I think, but it's one of those instances where everybody played their parts well, just that the script and it upon itself was not that good or strong, and those who were putting things together, granted, I don't want to say I'm not a fan of the comic, it's just that I'm familiar with the comic, meaning I know it's a comic, I know Mike Mignola created the comic and Hellboy, just that I am not overly familiar with the theme of the comic. I guess I got to, next time I'm at the library, I'll check their comic section to see if they have a kind of an omnibus or a couple of graphic novels based on the Hellboy universe that I could check out. And maybe in a later time, I'll give you a more in-depth review of this new movie to see it if it compares better. But some of the behind-the-scenes stuff that was in the Blu-ray kind of made it seem like they were trying to match the comic in a way of visual style and humor in a way. But I don't think in some ways that always works out. And for me, it didn't feel that way. But to kind of move on, with the horror, kind of similar thing, but the next two movies I want to talk about is Critters Attack and the Banana Splits movie. The first one I want to talk about is Critters Attack. I didn't see a lot of the sequels for the Critters movies. I did see the original. I'm familiar with the original. I've seen it numerous times. The other movies, I guess I got to fill in a little bit in regards to the story progression. But with this movie, it was okay. Again, it was rated R, but it was one of those things that it could have easily have been PG-13. I think it was rated R due to the fact that it had a little bit more quote-unquote violence and gore attached to it than it would have been PG-13, but it had more of a PG-13 feel to it. And there were some things that in it that didn't really have an explanation to it. Like the mom, in essence, the mom that was in the original is in this one. I don't know if she made an appearance in any of the other movies in the series. I think there's another, this is the sixth one. I don't know if the other middle four have the mom in it in any way, shape, or form to explain how she became a bounty hunter to protect the Earth from the Krites. But if you guys and gals know, please leave a comment down below in the comment section or email us at longcoatmafia@gmail.com and please let us know. But one of the things I want to also talk about this is because of the style of the movie and everything else, it did have a commentary, but it was, I want to say, not a mini commentary, meaning that there are some movies, I won't say some movies, there are, the main thing I want to talk about in regards to that is, or I should say the main example is, the style of it was like a South Park commentary, meaning if you had the DVDs, the commentary for the shows, or at least for a few of the shows, is just for a few minutes, and they explain everything, and it just goes into the show. It fits well. It is okay. It is what it is. With this, it was just a commentary on one particular scene. Normally, I wouldn't have any gripes about that, especially if it was a scene that would have benefited from a commentary standpoint. But what they did for this, it was a gimmick. Basically, that's all it is. It was strictly a gimmick, meaning that what they did was the director sat down with a mic. I'm using air quotes, so let me just say this. Quote, Mike the Krite, unquote. And my best guess was this director's attempt to sell a gimmick and or have a guy come in claiming that he's Mike the Krite and kind of do a little bit of an interview with Mike the Krite and like these creatures actually exist. And it was the dumbest, idiotic, stupid thing I could ever hear. Now, let me put it like this. When it comes to commentaries, not everyone is a gem. There's a lot of gems out there that actually explain, you know, how they did the shot, and it's a conversation, you know, in regards to the process that they did. And like, let's use a somewhat of a geeky reference from over the past 10 to 20 years, Stargate Arc of Truth. They kind of try to explain a few aspects of the shot. They tried to explain how high def is different than standard and how lighting works, but it was just boring and dull, and just I wanted to pay more attention to the movie than the commentary. Then you have commentaries that is like for Friday the 13th Part 10, you know, aka Jason in Space, where the commentary is light, I won't say lighthearted. They explain the shots, but it's fun, it's entertaining. They tell stories of what happened on the set and the process and everything else, and it's entertaining. It's well informed. Again, then you have the other extremes, like with the remake that was out many years ago. I think late 90s, early 2000s, it was the Tim Burton remake of Planet of the Apes. On that commentary, it's just Tim Burton droning on, boringly, on how he was deathly afraid of horses and how he couldn't be on set all the time because of his fear. But in regards to gimmicks like this, the closest thing I could do to this, two different movies. One is the Buckaroo Banzai commentary for that particular DVD. I don't know if they changed it for the Blu-ray. But let me just say this. The commentary, they're making it sound like the Buckaroo Banzai actually exists, the Blue Blazers actually exist, and everything else actually exists, and that the movie is basically a quote-unquote documentary in regards to it actually happens, and it's not a work of fiction. It doesn't work. It's I don't want to say it's a form of pandering. It just makes it sound like it's crap. You're not saying anything. I won't say you're not saying anything important. Saying, hey, Buckaroo Banzai gave us permission to do this. We had to follow his quote-unquote blueprints. And so-and-so, who's a member of the team, and we had to have volunteer people from the Blue Blazers come in and supervise everything to make sure it was exactly how it is in the Banzai Institute. Oh, come on. It's stupid. It's not that entertaining. It's not original. Now, on the other side of that, let's take Muppets in Space. Granted, that too has that same feel as what the whole aspect of Buckaroo Banzai is, but the presentation for it is that it's a kids' movie, it's geared towards kids. They're not, I don't want to say kids won't know any better, but it's geared towards kids. They have like a little animated, digital animated thing that looks like Mystery Science Theater 3000 on the screen while the movie's playing, and it's like a visual commentary. Of them watching the movie with you, with the Muppets on, in essence, quote unquote, on screen, talking about the movie, talking about this. That is, I want to say, is more excusable because, again, it's geared towards kids. It's not being completely serious. It kind of is, but it's kind of making fun of itself. That's not what I want to see in this type of, you know, commentary. Mr. Crate, have you had a lot of work since the original movie? No, it's just dog food commercials while I was playing the dog. No, this is not a kids movie. Yeah, you shouldn't have stupid stuff like that in there. If you talk about the scene, talk about, you know, the hours, what went on, but not interviewing a puppet or a guy pretending to be a stupid character on screen. This is not, you know, nowhere, anywhere, shape, or form. It was, it was just plain stupid. I hate commentaries like that. I prefer commentaries that are somewhat entertaining and informative. The ones that are best, again, are the ones that are saying, you know, hey, we had a... my best example that I heard is for, I think it's A Knight's Tale. The director, they had the director, they had a couple of actors on, they were talking about the horses. Again, it kind of mirrored a little bit like Tim Burton's commentary. He's like, I'm afraid of horses. But he was like, lighthearted, he's like, I don't like horses, I had to deal with it. But that horse, that particular horse, and mentioning the horse that one of the actors had to use, he said, that horse was the best acting horse I had to deal with, and I loved that horse. That was one particular lighthearted thing about the movie, and it kept me wanting to hear more of the commentary. I know there's one movie out there, I don't remember which one it is, they did the commentary at a bar while regular patrons were there having drinks, and from what I was told, there were people just shouting curse words at the drunk patrons, shouting curse words at the screen, you know, at the director and all that. I want to hear that. I want to know how entertaining that is. And to kind of still move on a little bit, is I also rented the Banana Splits movie. One of the things I heard about this is that it was a type of, it was like a way of doing a Five Nights at Freddy's live action movie without doing a live action, Five Nights at Freddy's live action movie. And you know what? I'm going to have to agree with that. It felt like just like that, and the only thing that they could get was the Banana Splits, which is, for those of you who are way younger or part of the millennial generation or younger, the Banana Splits was a Sid Marty Krofft type of television show from the late 60s, early 70s. It was syndicated until, I want to say, the early 80s. That's about it. I remember seeing it when I was a kid. Yes, I'm aging myself. A lot of the Sid and Marty Krofft shows, which are, these guys were probably on drugs. I mean, serious drugs. I don't mean anything like marijuana or like that. They were on some sort of hallucinogenic drugs when they thought about these shows. And they were just, they were geared to kids and to probably potheads. But I'm not saying there's anything wrong for those of you out there who smoke marijuana, but guys, gals, if you haven't seen the original Banana Splits or the original Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, they're probably on YouTube somewhere, and you could get the idea of how trippy, how weird, and how, I don't know how to describe these shows, man, but in regards to this movie, it's like they just wanted to take something innocent and just chalk it up to something horrific. You know, I don't want to say horrific or gory or anything like that, but again, it's just, I don't know. It's just, it felt, it was decently done. I want to say this, it was decently done, but it was the wrong thing. It just felt like what most people were saying about this movie. It was Five Nights at Freddy's, just with Banana Splits. And I did enjoy it. It did have the aspect of wanting to have a sequel, but I probably would rent the sequel if they did it, but it just didn't fit. You know, it's just that whole aspect of Five Nights at Freddy just with Banana Splits was going through my head. And with, like, both of these movies, it's just, you know, it needed something a little bit more. It needed, it felt a little bit wanting in regards to some stuff. It just needed to, where critters needed, Critics was the one that needed a little bit more stuff. It felt like, even though it probably felt fit the format of a Critters movie, it just felt like it needed more. And with this, it had the right amount, but it just, again, one of those things, wrong presentation. I think if they got the rights to do a live-action Five Nights at Freddy movie, this is the foundation. Again, it could have been the aspect or a template, kind of like how District 9 was. I know a lot of you out there are not familiar with District 9, but basically, to go into a brief history about that, is that District 9 was the proof, in essence, a proof of concept movie that we can do it. Henry Hardcore was another one that, just like that. We're giving you a proof of concept. We don't care if it, like most people, when it comes to the movie, they want to succeed, they don't want to make its money back, but they want to show that it's a proof of concept. And at the time of District 9, pretty much what it was going around was that they wanted to make a live-action Halo movie. Master Chief, Covenant, the whole nine yards. And a lot of studios were saying no. This is what I heard at that time. A lot of studios were saying no, it costs too much, you can't do a movie similar to that with, you know, on a low budget or a small budget, and so forth and so on. And the folks that were behind District 9 pretty much said, oh yeah, look what we can do. And they did a halfway decent movie. Same thing with Hardcore Henry. From what I hear, it's like one of those instances where you can't have a full movie done via a first person. And again, they said, oh yeah, let's see if we can do it. And they've done it. So there's the aspect of proof of concept. And I guess the Banana Splits was a form of that. Maybe they were told, in regards to those behind Five Nights at Freddy, you can't do it. We won't give you any rights to do it. We don't want to do it. You can't. There's no way you can convert something like that to a movie. So I guess they acquired the rights to the Banana Splits from whoever is in charge of the Sid and Marty Krofft stuff, and they made a horror movie out. They were granted approval. If that's the reason behind this, there was no real commentary, there was no real behind the scenes other than that they wanted to do it with these creatures, and they felt creepy when they watched the stuff as a kid, and the reruns and the DVDs as videotapes as a kid, they were creepy, so let's do it. But I would love to have known if the real reason behind it was, we wanted to do a Five Nights at Freddy film, live action. They told us, unless we could prove concept that it could be done right and it could work. Yeah, that's the thing. It felt more like that than anything else. That they wanted to do a horror movie based on nostalgia. That's it. I do kind of recommend giving it a check out. Even though the quote-unquote animatronic characters, or the robotic characters, not so much look like robotic characters. They just look like people in mascot costumes that they dug out of mothballs from the Sid and Marty Krofft archives or wherever they were keeping them. But if you could just look past that, overall, it's a decent storyline. I do say give it a check out, even though most of the people will tell you stay away from it. And speaking of movies to stay away from, I did check out the two. I want to say it's a two-parter. A lot of my anime fans online, or a lot of the people in the anime community, this came out probably not last year, probably maybe 2017-2018. It was the live action version of Attack on Titan, part 1 and part 2. Yes, the library had it. And again, granted, all these titles I'm talking to you about today, or I should say this week, were free from the library. That's right, I didn't have to pay a stinking dime. So, which gives me a chance that if these movies were anyway at all crap and bad, they weren't that bad. None of them were that bad that, you know what, I'm hitting stop and I'm going to just drop them off at the Dropbox at the library. None of them were that bad. They were all entertaining, but these two. A lot of my anime fans seen this, but it was mostly on social media, were saying, don't watch these this particular live action. They suck. Now, granted, when it comes to a lot of the live action movies that are out there that are being imported in the United States or made in the States, they have, you know, no matter what it is, it sucks. It sucks. It sucks. That's what it is. It's kind of like, no matter what it is, this person sucks. Didn't fit the role. This, that, and other thing. Let me just say this. The only, out of the live action ones that I've seen that were remotely bad, that were based on either anime or game, one was kind of based on a game that was made into an anime that, one of which was made into a game, that's really sucked really bad was Street Fighter, the one that came out in the 90s with Jean-Claude Van Damme. That was, bad, except for, I think his name was Ron Jewell, the guy that played, Bison. He sold that role. He did it for his kids, and he, God rest his soul, passed away soon after, but he sold that role. I want to say he sold that role. He was the only saving grace about that role. He wanted to do everything because he really wanted to do the role, and I give him credit for that. But overall, it was a bad movie. But there was a live-action Street Fighter movie that kind of centered around Ken and Ryu that was very good and pretty decent. But again, the fans, you know, stay away from it. Why are you watching this? You know, it sucks. I want to say this. Again, I'll defend the live-action Ghost in the Shell. It was pretty dang good. It was close to the multiple versions of Ghost in the Shell. Battle Angel is probably the number one on the list that was, again, close to the manga, close to the anime, even though the anime is pretty much two episodes or one particular one episode, depending on where you could find it on YouTube, but or if you manage to have the VHS tape, two episodes. But this, the Attack on Titan, even though it was created, put out by Funimation, it seemed like it was made by Toho Films, meaning that it seemed like just people wearing the Titans suits to make them more look like Titans and a model city just to knock stuff down. That's what it felt like. I'm not saying that is necessarily a bad thing. I'm an old school Toho fan as it is. And for those of you out there who are not familiar with Toho, Toho back in the 60s, not only did they make the original Godzilla, they put out a lot of the, I know a lot of you out there who are Toho fans, now let's go here, but I'm saying Godzilla because that's what I remember them being released as, and under is Godzilla, but they released, they made a lot of the Godzilla movies up until today. I think they're still making Godzilla movies out there in Tokyo. And they're doing a bang-up job. But they released many films. I remember watching in essence, The Person in the Suit back in the that were released in the 70s and 80s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Every Saturday as a kid. That's the thing. That's what I felt like. It felt like a Toho film. And to me, it had its certain, it had that appeal. It made it enjoyable for me. I think if you haven't seen the anime, though, you would be a little bit confused in regards to what's going on and, in essence, why. Because a lot of it is skipped. And yes, there are some differences between the movies and the anime. But overall, the anime, I'm sure, the manga is better than anime, and the anime is better than live action, I'll say that. But I do recommend watching the anime because it goes into a little bit more depth. And these two movies cover maybe the first season and a half, maybe. Granted, I haven't seen all the seasons of, I think it's just two that's on Hulu. I haven't seen the second season through all the way. I think haven't watched the last four or five episodes, but I'm close to the end of it. So either ways, don't hold me to that. I want to, as soon as my technical issues are done with here at the house, at the safe house, I'll try to check back to see if Hulu still has Attack on Titan and try to get back into that along with a few others like One Punch Man and see what else is out there. If you have an anime recommendation, please, again, put it in the comments down below. If you're listening to either it on YouTube or on in our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. While you're there, hit that like button. But I want to say that, you know, it was decent. It had that charm. I do recommend, if you have no clue about what Attack on Titan is, watch a little bit of the anime to get a general idea of what's going down. But if you have not seen a sizable chunk of anime, please be forewarned. Depending on the anime that you pick up, you're going to be greatly surprised. But if you're used to anime and how it's told, please check it out. Give it a shot. Form your own opinion. Don't listen to the hate. Granted, I'm one of the few people that is considered by many anime fans as a filthy casual, because I prefer dubbed over subbed because of a lot of the animes that I tend to watch are action-filled, and I don't like to watch, something like that twice because I missed out on something that was on screen when I was reading subtitles. I know the subtitles a little bit more script accurate and are more with the aspect of translation. So, or I should say more true to the translation than the dub, because from what I've heard is that a lot of times people just make up the stories as they go along. You know what, folks? When we're at 4-State this year, there's going to be someone who is a voice actor who has done quite, I think, one or two anime. I think he was the voice of Goku. And we'll get how his answer to that, because it'll be one of the things that we tried to ask him in regards to that the stories are made up, meaning that the American story is different than the Japanese story. Now, I said that would pose an interesting question, but I believe not. There are a few things that might be changed or censored, but there are, I think most of the time it's going to be directly the same as the story that is from Japan. I think a lot of again, it'll be something that we'll have to check with that particular voice actor when we meet him this year in just a couple of weeks. And let's see, what else? That seems to be, I did just recently check out the reboot of Pet Sematary. It was okay. As someone who watched the original, this had some elements that I liked, and didn't have a lot of the old stuff. It just didn't feel right, you know, for the most part. They tried their best. It just, again, it's one of those things that didn't feel right. I got it for free at the library. I wanted to check it out. It didn't hold my interest that much, but again, from what I heard, a lot of people enjoyed the cat more than the movie, and I can understand why, but I think this also deviated from the movie a little bit. I think this was more book accurate than the original movie. I think with the original movie, it was just the one child. With this, it was two children. And I think with the book, it was also two children. So it'll make me want to reread the book. And speaking of that as well, I also did get a chance to watch, again, thanks to the library for having the season set for it, and that was Good Omens. This was a Amazon exclusive series, and since I didn't have Prime, and still don't have Prime, I checked it out. I wanted to see how, because a lot of people were raving about this movie, this particular series. Even though I think it did have some hate about it somewhere, I forgot what it was, but I watched it. I actually enjoyed it. It was pretty good, and it makes me want to read the book to see how it compares to the show or what was left out, because a lot of folks have raved about Good Omens and recommended it to me, and they said there's a lot more jokes and humor in the book that was not included in the show. So I want to say I want to check it out. It makes me want to read the book, and I'll probably do that. I'll load the book up onto, if not my phone, onto my Kindle and give it a read while I'm either at work or out and about somewhere. So I will check it out. I want to say this. Everybody sold their parts, especially David Tennant. It just felt right. Everything felt... makes me want to re-rent it and to see what some of the extras were on both discs. I think I saw one or two additional scenes that were part of it. And yeah, I can understand why they cut them out, because it just screwed with the pacing. And I like I said, I enjoyed it. So if you have a chance to rent Good Omens, I'll say the show, not the book, please do so. I highly recommend it. I enjoyed it. And not to mention, it's only 6 episodes long. Each one being about 45 minutes to an hour long. And it does work, and it's very good. And it does have its... it does have its humorous moments, but it's more British humor. And it's way different from our humor. So... you'll have to deal with that. But as a fan of British humor, I did enjoy it. And again, David Tennant, everybody played their parts extremely well. Check it out. That being said, I'm going to end the show right there. So that being said, if you want to join in the conversation, please do so by either sending us an email at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or leaving a comment in the pinned post on Facebook, at our Facebook page, which is it's facebook.com/ The Long Coat Mafia Podcast. While you're there, hit that like button. Even though I haven't been doing so lately, but once all the technical difficulties come away, I'll be posting more regularly on our Facebook page and as well as on our Twitter. Speaking of Twitter, our Twitter handle is Long Coat Mafia, and while you're there, if you want to join the conversation, you can leave us a direct message. And also, we have an Instagram, if you want to follow us there. Our handle there is Long Coat Mafia, and you can leave a direct message what you thought about the show. We'll read the stuff on air. Social media. We do have a YouTube channel. You have to just do a search. If you haven't subscribed already, please do a search for Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It's the only channel that comes up. While you're there, please hit that subscribe button. I know we haven't done any videos yet for 2020, but we will do so as soon as we can. And not to mention, despite the fact that the new algorithms for YouTube have not picked up some of our shows, but the ones that have been picked up are on YouTube. You can hear a lot of our past episodes up there. And for whatever the current episode is, you can leave a comment, listen to it, and leave a comment in the comment section down below. If you like what you hear, you can always hit that like button, which helps us out greatly. And let's see what else. We do have two game streaming channels. One is on Mixer. Our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP. And those letters are capitalized. And as soon as we get back on, we will be streaming more so on Mixer than on Twitch. Speaking of Twitch, our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/longcoatmafiapod. Let's see. We do have a TikTok channel. I'm not sure. I think it's LCM Pod. Either way, you could always find our links on our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. Again, it's thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And while you're there, you could always download or stream all our episodes going all the way back to our first episodes back in 2015. Who would have thought we would be still going strong 4.5 years later, folks? I know, I think it's part of the fact that we've been going 4.5 years strong that we are stumbling now. It was about time that we had this type of stumble. But either way, we'd be more than happy for you to visit our main website. Again, it's thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. You can download our episodes, see our links. There's a few things that we have to adjust to it or add to it. And you could stream any or all of our episodes, all I think 251 of them, on our website. We have loads of interviews, panel episodes, a few creepy pastas. Speaking of which, I might do that again. It's been a while since we did a few creepy pastas, so that might be part of our repertoire again, because it's been a while. I don't think I did one, so probably stay tuned for one of those. Let's see what else. Speaking of, we're streaming and downloading our show. If you have a desktop or laptop computer, you can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Spotify, and again, our main website, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And if you're on a mobile device, whether a tablet or phone or what have you, you can always use the Apple Podcasts app, Google Podcast app, Stitcher, Spotify, and plus the Podbean app. If you visit our main website on your mobile phone, it will require you to use the Podbean app to download the episodes. I personally recommend you bookmarking if you're on a desktop computer, bookmarking our webpage, again, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And if you're on a mobile device, downloading the Podbean app, because just in case something goes wrong with one of the other podcatching apps or iTunes or Spotify on your desktop, you still have a backup way of catching our latest episodes. And with that, I am out. And, well, we managed to hit about 45 minutes. So I'm going to, again, end it here. Good night, all. And I'll see you all next week with an interview. It's going to be, we're switching it up next week a little bit. But I hope you enjoy it. It's going to be an interview episode. It's going to be a live in-studio type of interview. So stick around, check it out, and I'll see you all next week.
You've been listening to the Long Coat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.